Hey, everybody, it's Brian. Before we get into today's interview with Samantha Wood, Director of Social and Digital Media with the Philadelphia Eagles, it's a great interview. You're going to love it. I have a question for you. Are you a new graduate or working professional interested in a university-level sports management education without the cost or commitment of a traditional master's program? I know many of you are. Many of you contact me all the time and say, hey, I want to get more education, but I'm not sure I want to get my master's. What can I do? Well, the University of California, Irvine has a great option. They offer an online open enrollment four-course sports management certificate that prepares you for a career in the business of sports. Learn more about this exciting opportunity and download a sports management career planning toolkit, which is pretty cool. I've checked it out at ce.uci.edu/sport-management. All right, that's a long URL, so let's do it again. CE, as in continuing education. So, .UCI, as in University of California, Irvine, .edu/sport-management. Not sports management, sport management. I want to make sure you get this right. CE.UCI.edu/sport-management. Go check it out. Now, let's start the countdown.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hi, everybody. I'm Brian Clapp, VP of Content and Engaged Learning at WorkInSports.com, and this is the Work in Sports podcast. Everyone wants to work in sports social media. Okay, that's hyperbolic. It isn't everyone, but it seems pretty darn close. I get these emails and these conversations all the time, and it seems like that's where so many people nowadays want to focus. No one, at least very few people, remarked to me, at least, that they want to work in sports sales, despite it having a really high career ceiling and money-making potential. Very few share their love and desire to work in facility management or consumer goods, despite the enormous opportunities at sports facilities around the globe and massive consumer brands churning out shoes, apparel, and equipment at monumental clips. Nope. It seems most of you have sold your soul to Twitter. I'll admit, I'll see a tweet from friend of the show, Katie Gillen, who works for Atlanta FC, and when she shares a cool graphic or behind-the-scenes video or an incredible photo, a funny comment related to the team, I think to myself, she's got a pretty awesome job. That looks like a lot of fun. I'm sure she's having a blast. Or I noticed today's guest, Samantha Wood, Director of Digital and Social Media with the Philadelphia Eagles, do the same. And there may be a tinge of creative jealousy. As a creator myself, you see people put in positions to be creative and thrive. And sure, I can absolutely see the excitement behind working in social media for a team or organization. I understand the draw. I get it. But I don't want to dampen the dream, but I want to be very clear with all of you. I believe wholeheartedly in setting reasonable expectations, telling people the truth about the industry and its roles. Social media, here's the big unveil. Social media in sports is not just a content party. Katie Gillen, Samantha Wood, Zachary Galea, who's been on the show, who now works for the Arizona Cardinals in their social media world, will tell you all the same. It's a lot more than just tweeting. It's a lot more than just posting on Facebook. It's a lot more than just getting a behind-the-scenes video. I lifted this directly from a job posting for a social media coordinator from our site, WorkInSports.com, where if you hadn't noticed, there are 14,482 active sports jobs right now. I mean, like, that's a lot. So for all you people struggling to get started in the industry, we have the jobs. Come check it out. Anyway, I lifted these details from one of the jobs currently active on our site for a social media coordinator. So get some of these bullet points. Track and analyze social media insights, trends, and new platforms. Execute paid social media campaigns and budgets. Assist with website content via the content management system, including but not limited to events, promotions, photo galleries, and general information. Help with database collection through contests, promotions, campaigns, and events. Ability to learn and create visually appealing graphic designs using Canva. Assist with coordination and management of photography and videography. Plan, design, and manage the outbound emails, including database management. Work with sponsors on activations and implementations of their contracts. Work with operations to execute game day promotions, sponsorship information, and in-game program elements. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot more than just you will be funny and creative and tweet. Matter of fact, I read that stuff and think that sounds even more interesting to me. That actually sells me on the job more. But some people might not see it that way. Let's pull out some key skills here. Tracking and analyzing data, budgeting, executing paid campaigns, database management, creating graphics on Canva, managing content assets, activation, contracts, game day promotions. You can look at yourself and say to yourself right now, am I a match for a job like this? Do I have those skills? Is this still the same thing I thought sports social media was? Now, that's a coordinator role, which is an entry-level role. Imagine how this ramps up as you become a director, like Samantha, like Katie Gillen, like Zachary Galea. As I said, sports social media isn't just a content playground. It's a function of the business operations of a team or organization. And you need to have more than just the ability to tweet to get these jobs. But there's no one better to teach you that and share more details into the world than today's guest, Samantha Wood, Director of Digital and Social Platform with the former world champion Philadelphia Eagles. Yes, it's hard for me to say that because, yes, I am a Patriots fan. And yes, that was very difficult. And Brandon Graham and blah, blah, blah. But nonetheless, Samantha's a great guest and I'm sure you're going to enjoy learning from her. Here we go. Hi, Samantha. How are you doing today?
I'm great, Brian. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm very excited to have you on. Let's just jump into this thing. I'm excited to have you on. You graduated in 2011 from Northeastern, and as I was doing a little bit of research to kind of figure out, you know, the best questions to ask you, I was really impressed to see that during your college time, you did what, about 5 internships? You interned with New England Sports Network and ESPN and with the Boston Bruins. How important was it? Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. How important was it for you to gain that high level experience while you were still kind of going through your college experience as well?
I mean, I think that was everything, honestly. I'm not one of those people that grew up wanting to work in sports, to be honest. I don't know that I ever realized that that was an option. And while I was a casual sports fan, I don't necessarily know that it was my passion growing up. So having the opportunity that, and not to sound like a brochure or anything, but having the opportunity that Northeastern afforded me and affords all of its students is that co-op program. And that was huge because my very first co-op, you know, 6 months full-time work, basically, for people that are not familiar with what co-ops are, you go to work for full-time and then you come back to school and then you do it again. And my first one was in textbook publishing, weirdly enough.
What?
I wanted to be a book publisher. I was an English major. I thought that that's sounded cool. Spoiler, that was not cool. I did not like it. I hated it. And it was a lot of the same every day. And I realized that that was something that wasn't what I wanted to spend the rest of my life doing. And that was so valuable because then I could sort of pivot. And I ended up taking that ESPN internship on the side. It was sort of, I guess, internships a little bit generous to call that, but it was sort of just a gopher for college game day. And it was just something that I was like, okay, like people make careers out of this and this is fun. And I just sort of skipped class and, you know, did it on the side when they were in town. And then I thought, you know, well, why not try to make something of this? And so being able to sort of shift gears and take a co-op with the Bruins and another internship with Nesson, having that opportunity. So when I got out of college, I was well prepared and I knew what I liked. And almost just as importantly, I knew what I didn't like. So that was huge for me. And I'm not quite sure where I would be had I gone to a more traditional 4-year college. So Northeastern, that's just sort of the culture of the university. And I owe a lot to that.
So wait, you started out with an internship with the textbook company. And then what inspired you to say, okay, now I'll jump to ESPN? Like, how did that kind of transition? You could have gone anywhere. Like, why that choice?
So what happened was I was a double major in English and journalism, which is kind of a weird, I didn't realize at the time that was a weird combination, but it was. And so one of my journalism professors emailed, I remember it like it was yesterday, he emailed the class and said, you know, the production company that does College Game Day with ESPN is in town. They need runners. And I was like, okay. And they paid $100 a day. And we had to go to Boston College and be a runner for College Game Day. Like, I have no idea what a runner does, but I like the idea. It sounds interesting. You know, ESPN, of course, piqued my interest.
Yeah.
Why not, right? So I was the first one to reply to the email. And I went, and it was just, I mean, they were just so nice for somebody. I think I was like 19 or 20 at the time. They were so nice and so patient with me for somebody that I had no idea. And that like electricity of that game, it was Notre Dame versus Boston College. Mm-hmm. I could not have cared less about college football, but that crowd and just knowing that you're part of something bigger and seeing the people that work behind the scenes and, you know, they had a lot of fun with each other. They worked hard, but they had fun. I mean, it was awesome. So I, you know, sat in for the light level checks. I got coffee. I held wires, you know, that sort of thing. And I really enjoyed it. So I stuck with them, and every time, you know, they were in sort of the New England area, they'd give me a buzz and I would go do whatever, you know, whatever sport that they were doing. And it was just, you know, it was a great experience. And I remember telling my mom, and she was like, really? Like, really? That's something you want to do? Like, you're not a sports fan in the family. I was like, it was fun. And you know, if I can go to work every day and have a little fun and not ever dread going into work, why not? Like, this is great. So that's when I figured I would try my hand at an internship with NESN, New England Sports Network, and they gave me, happened to be hockey season.
Yeah.
You know, they also do Red Sox, but it happened to be hockey season. They gave me a hockey test. It was like a handwritten actual test, and I failed. Like, I mean, failed miserably. They had me, you know, how many points for a win do you get in hockey? And me being like, I don't know. I said one. Like, that's not right.
That's great.
You know, like, when's the last time the Bruins won the Stanley Cup? I had no idea. You know, and they hired me anyway, weirdly. But I literally made flashcards with the roster and all that stuff. And then that was that sort of, we would take turns. So I would be like in the studio one day and then at the arena another day, and we sort of rotate. And I was like, how can I, like, the studio's all right. The arena's really fun. Like, how can I find a job that happens in the arena? And then, that was when, the Boston Bruins internship program came about, and I think it's the first one to turn it into a co-op. So it was pretty easy play to call when I told them, I was like, I can work 6 months full time. Yeah. And they were like, okay, you're hired. So, so they've since hired quite a few co-ops because it just makes sense. But yeah, so that's how it became that way. And then by that time I had just committed, you know,
you're hooked.
I was just so excited to work in sports, and I had so much fun. And at that point I was like, all right, well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it the best I can. And so
I was actually
sort of led off from there.
Yeah. I was actually really similar. I was a big sports fan growing up, but then never really thought of it like a career. I actually started out as a chemistry and biology double major.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And I ended up going to a boxing event, and I was in the production truck, and it was the same kind of thing you're talking about. Like, I walked in and I realized, like, wow, this sort of thing happens all the time. There's all these people going into this event, and I'm not even I wasn't even a boxing fan. I was a sports fan, but not a boxing fan. And I remember being there in the production truck that day and thinking, this is like my fix. This is what I need. Like, I love this intensity and this urgency and all this stuff going on, all the people cheering. It just, like, I don't know, it just drove me crazy. And so that's when I started to lean into it. So I totally understand that you kind of have that moment you can look back on. So for you, though, once you graduated, you've got this killer resume now. I mean, a lot of people, when they graduate, they don't have much on their resume, and you've got huge experience. How much?
And I mean, we had done like the Stanley Cup too. We won the Stanley Cup in 2011, which was insane. So that was like, I mean, and for me, it's funny. I look back on it and I'm like, I was 21 and I was like, huh, this is fun. We should do that every year.
Wow. This is great. So how did that change things for you when you went out to get like a real job? I mean, you had real experience on your resume. How did that separate you from the rest of the competition, would you think?
You know, it's one of those things that, like, I mean, I intentionally, you know, made my resume as good as it could possibly be. My friends in college used to joke that I was never around because I was always working. But even with that, it took a good 3 months after college to land my first job. And that's pretty typical. I think that's what they say normally you can expect. But it was a low point. You know, I moved back my parents live out in the suburbs of Philadelphia. So I moved back there, you know, and Northeastern's a 5-year school. I did it in 4, but so all my friends were still in school and they were all having fun. And I was like, why did I do this? You know?
Yeah.
And I started thinking about getting out of sports. I really didn't want to, and I was avoiding it at all costs. But like at some point, 3 months out of school, you're like, all right, I need a real job. So what I basically did was, you know, I made applying for jobs a job.
Yep.
And I, you know, I was really, you know, meticulous about it. And I just pulled absolutely every string of every person that I had ever met in my internship life. And I finally landed the job at the American Hockey League. But they told me later, it was interesting that they actually had not pulled me out of the pile. You know, obviously thousands of people apply for these types of jobs and I didn't make the initial cut. And what happened was I had met, Joe Saville, who's the PR director at the Philadelphia Flyers. I met him while I was at the Bruins and he had had that job at the AHL before. And so I had emailed him being like, oh, this job's opening. Like, do you know anybody? And so he, you know, of course, you're still in on merit, but yeah. He had said, hey, take a look at this girl. And they pulled me out of the pile. And they said, because I had applied, they can see your application history. For anybody that doesn't know that, they can see your application history. And because I had applied to so many jobs, they sort of, and wrongfully had, you know, said, well, you know, she maybe just doesn't really want this. And it was sort of a wake-up call to change my strategy that quantity isn't always the best and yes. that I had to be more targeted about what jobs I wanted to do and then really follow up with anybody that everybody knows everybody in this town and in this industry. Mm-hmm. So, follow up and really advocate for myself. And it ended up being just such a great experience. And I'm so grateful that I was able to start working there. But yeah, it was scary. And that's even with a stacked resume. It's a lot of luck. It's a lot of timing. And it's not something I started applying before I graduated. And that immediately sort of ruled me out for a lot of these jobs because people don't want kids that are still in college. You know, a lot of times it's like an immediate need. So yeah, but I'm really happy. And once you're in, but that it was a long process that got really scary for a long time.
Yeah. You know, I interviewed Colleen Scholes who works for the Eagles mm-hmm. with you.
She's like the expert.
Yeah. A few months back. And she was saying the exact same thing. She's like, when we're bringing people in, I want them to be interested in this job, not just like working for the organization. And that's I think you make a really good point there is that I don't think people realize that they might be hurting their cause sometimes if they just do a shotgun technique and apply everywhere and just hope for some magic to happen. They really have to be focused in on the job that they really want. So
absolutely.
You slummed it in Boston for a while, and I can say that because I'm from Boston. Actually, I live outside of Philadelphia now, so I'm actually following your path backwards in a way.
No, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. So after that, you landed a job with the Flyers. So you really stuck with this hockey idea, even though just a few years prior, like you even admitted, you weren't quite as knowledgeable about the sport. You go into Philadelphia working with the Flyers, major organization. You're the digital media manager. What were some of the big things you learned from that job and that overall experience?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting and it ended up being a really great path that I took because, you know, being in the American Hockey League to start with, that was sort of when it taught me like the business of sports, right? You know, that was when I figured out sponsorship and marketing and all that stuff beyond just like, okay, this is a fun thing. So that was sort of the training wheels. And I learned so much there because you wear a lot of hats.
Yeah.
And then, when I went to the Flyers, it was like, oh, you just walked in. When I went to the Flyers, it was more of like, okay, the stakes are very high right now. It's a, you know, obviously a really popular team. And it was a different situation because I learned how to work as a group with a much larger group. The AHL, I think at the time only had like 14 people in the office, give or take. And, the Flyers have over 100. So, working with a really large group, being able to take ownership over the strategy, I think was really big for me. Because I was hired as a coordinator there and then I was promoted to manager, but then I had never had the opportunity to sort of drive the bus a little bit when it comes to digital media. And then being fully digital, I had started in PR. And so shifting gears and really, owning the internet and that and how that works with the organization was big because then I could prove myself as somebody that basically just knows what they're talking about. So, it was a maturity level. I think it's night and day from when I was hired there at like 24 to when I left at 28. I mean, it was a long 4 years or 3 years and It was a huge experience for me because then it went from somebody who was a doer to more somebody who was thinking more strategically.
Yep.
But yeah, the hockey thing, honestly, it's just a really small world, especially sports is a small world, but hockey is really small. And, that was sort of one of those things that I had grown to be pretty good at. And I really grew to love that sport so much. And so when the opportunity arose to come home, work for my hometown team, and go back to a team setting was a no-brainer for me. So it was a great experience there.
Yeah, I've said it before on the podcast that in my media experience, dealing with hockey players was the best because it was a different type of openness and a want to talk and explain, and they were willing to do interviews and wanted to share what they were going through. And I mean, we dream about that. You deal with a lot of teams on the other leagues and it would be so hard to get in and get some real storytelling done. And then you go to hockey games and it was like the easiest thing in the world. Like everybody wanted to talk to you. It's a totally different environment.
You know, it's funny. I almost feel the opposite a little bit. I have to say, and I think it's varies based on organizations. The players themselves are amongst, you hit it on the head, they're the nicest people ever. Yeah. That being said, hockey, in my experience anyway, is a little more old school. So when it comes to the digital side of things, I think organizationally and even a little bit on an individual level, like if you look, for example, and not that one's better than the others, but if you look at like what football players do on their personal social media versus, and even NBA players versus what hockey players do on their personal social media, it's a much more old school perspective. Like the running joke is that like, if you can tweet, you can score goals, you know, meaning like yeah. Stop paying so much attention to what's going on online and pay attention to what's happening on the ice and that sort of thing. That is changing, I think, as executives get younger and younger and the industry evolves. I think you'll see more and more hockey players take ownership of their sort of what they have digital persona online. But I think when it comes to that relationship, it's definitely a different one and the opposite of what I expected for sure. But
that's interesting because it does, I'm sure it varies some from team to team too, because I look at it and think like the LA Kings had one of the most creative, have one of the most creative Twitter accounts and social media just perspectives you'll ever see. And I loved, mm-hmm. I mean, I think they set the standard for being able to be less PR driven, you know, less like we have to say press release style everything, to being so much more creative and outside the box and just like being able to say funny things that almost were self-deprecating. And I don't know, I think
it's
they,
funny
they
you
were
say
great.
That because they don't get a lot of credit for it.
They don't, and they should.
They should, and they are always, I will be the first to say, they were the first team, and even one of the first brands to sort of flip it a little bit and change. Now, granted, they've sort of changed, you know, since then, and it's slightly, their account's different, but back then, and it's like back in the day, but it wasn't that long
ago,
groundbreaking, and a lot of people credit the NBA, and I love NBA accounts, but I think it was the Kings really that, dipped their toes in at first. And it was really impressive and one that we were extremely jealous of all the time because they had a lot of leeway and they were so creative with it.
Yep. So then you transitioned to the NFL, which is again, another big jump going from, you know, the NHL and that community to the NFL. Now you're the digital platform manager for the Philadelphia Eagles. What is your day-to-day role like now and your responsibilities? And kind of take us through, like, what's it like during the season and then like game day and then even now in the off season? Like, what's kind of your process?
Oh boy.
Big question.
So right. So it's a cop-out answer, but the real true answer is that there's no typical day, which I think is why most people who work in sports get into it in the first place. It's just, you never know what you're walking into. So a typical day is sort of, you know, a misnomer, but when it comes to my day to day, I definitely, in prior years have been doing more of like the actual posting of things, and that takes a lot of time and effort. So that would normally take up my day, but now I have a great team with me, and so it's really more of a strategic planning role. Mm-hmm. And then I help with the content production and you know, fill in the gaps where needed, but it's a lot less of the button pushing, which frees me up to be more creative, I would think, and put more time towards that effort. But really what it is, you know, now being at the Eagles, talk about, you know, going from minor leagues to major leagues with the Flyers, and now we're turning it up even more. there's a lot of departments. There's a lot of people that have our stakeholders in what we do on digital. And so everybody has to be on the same page. So that's a big role of mine, is to talk with all the other departments, whether that's our football operations or corporate sales or marketing or you name it. I'm usually sitting in a lot of meetings. But it's not in a boring way. It's very interesting to hear about what their goals are, what their struggles are, and then how we can support them and support the entire organization with our, what we do on digital and our content. So it's a lot of planning. It's a lot of calendarizing things, trying to play offense instead of defense.
Okay.
And just being flexible, honestly, because that's lay plans, right? So I could come in, you know, I could hang up the phone right now because somebody might get traded, right? So it doesn't matter what you have planned, you still have to build in that flexibility or else you're going to be in big trouble. So it's a lot of that, but I try as best I can to plan ahead of time because it makes everybody a little less crazy, but it really just depends. And then on game day, that's a non-game day look at it. And then on game day, you know, you actually probably get in more of a routine on game day than anything else, believe it or not. I do travel with the team, so I go to every game. And where I end up being the most useful on game day is Instagram stories, Snapchat, and then just sort of the on-the-field content collection, wherever the interesting stuff is happening, whether it's in the tunnel, in the end zone, on the bench, that sort of thing. So I'm always sort of roaming around and gathering content. And the reason for that, honestly, is because that was where the need was when I first started here. That was Snapchat and Instagram were blowing up and we didn't have the extra hands. So I jumped in and, you know, I really enjoy it because I sort of get that fix of, you know, that what I used to do, which is the direct posting. And it's just fun because, I mean, who else gets to watch the Super Bowl from the sideline and cover the Super Bowl? And I mean, that's just, it's great. So, so yeah, it's a lot of travel and a lot of planning, but all really fun, and I get to just do so much cool stuff. I can't even believe it. Sometimes I got to pinch myself.
Does it seem like so many people look at the social media and they from a team perspective, you're not in a position where you're going to be breaking news or doing things like that. So really your ability is to be able to have that access point that other people don't have. Like when you talk about being in the tunnel or being around the players or being out at practice or being on the field, like being able to share that sort of stuff must be what I would think generates the most interest from your fan base too, is because you're giving them a perspective that they can't get anywhere else. That access point. Is that what you find to be the most, the stuff that really resonates with the crowd the most?
For sure. I mean, it's, you know, it's, we do at some points break news, and that's why we have a really great relationship with our public relations department. So, and football ops. So we work really hard to break news when we can, but either way, even if you're not breaking it, you're still the official word. So
right.
We want to make sure that we get that right. But yeah, when it comes to something that we've sort of been redesigning our social strategy and our digital overall, just content strategy. And we realized that, you know, there's a million ESPNs in the world, not to undercut ESPN, but there's a lot of people doing that sort of analyst style content. We can do that. We do that. But it's not our bread and butter. And we know that that's not where we're going to pull ahead of the pack. What we have that nobody else has is exactly what you said, which is the access. It's the relationship with the players. Yep. They know who we are. They know that they can trust us. They come to us with ideas a lot. And there's definitely, like I said, a trust factor. So we're able to do some more interesting stuff that doesn't necessarily mean all casual. Sometimes it's very football heavy, but it's getting their perspective.
Yeah.
And then other times it is the casual fun stuff. And having that trust factor that they wouldn't normally do with the rest of the media. Our football department operations, I'm so grateful for them because they treat us as the team, you know, so we have a level of access that a lot of other teams don't have. And it's just, we never take that for granted. I think we're just so grateful that they are willing to be flexible and that it's really the trust factor that they know that we are going to do what's best for the team. And it's not a gotcha thing. We're never going to put anything out that they don't want out there. And so they've definitely repaid that in that access. So yeah, I mean, it goes without saying, really, that our best stuff is stuff that you cannot get anywhere else. And by and large, that is the access pieces and all that fun stuff.
Yeah. You tweeted something right before the Super Bowl that really caught my eye. You tweeted out, "The Patriots and Eagles social teams are both led by ladies, and I think that's cool as hell. Best of luck off the field to my girl." Is it Cecily Fainza? Is that her name?
Anyway, yeah.
So this stood out to me, and that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to contact you for the podcast. We've highlighted many female executives in sports on the show, and I think it's really important to empower and enlighten the many female sports fans out there who can make this a career, who may have been intimidated to in the past. I know when I first came into the industry in 1996, there was, I mean, it would probably be 80-20 men to women, and I think that's getting a lot closer. That gap is shrinking. For you, in your career, how is it, and I know this is kind of a broad question, but how is it working as a woman in the sports industry? Is it something you even think about, or are there moments it's hard because guys tend to think they own the sports world? What's kind of your take on your experience so far?
You know, it's funny because it oscillates. You know, it's sometimes I don't think about it for weeks and weeks and weeks, and sometimes it just hits you in the face. And it's little things, you know. A lot of times we'll see people say, "Oh, the Eagles social media guy," you know. Or one time we had on Reddit, who in our subreddit for the Eagles are just so great. But one time I have two guys working under me on my team, and they made an assumption that they were my boss because I'm a woman, you know. And it's funny, and I also like to think because I look young. But it was funny, and it. I wasn't offended by it. I was a little flattered even, but it's just one of those things. It's like, it's not necessarily a battle every single day, but every now and again, you get these little reminders that it's unusual. Especially with my name, I've run into it in the past. Obviously my name is Samantha, but a lot of people call me Sam. Yep. And I've literally taken to putting Samantha in my email signature for the only reason, because people will assume that I'm a man. And when I get on conference calls or whatever, it's always that like, Oh, hi, you know, yeah. And it's that like weird half second, and it's nobody's doing it maliciously, but it's one of those things. So yes, it's unusual. It's definitely getting better and better. I think, you know, there's been moments that, people have suggested a man do something over me because he's a man. And, you know, I credit the Eagles organization with just, you know, not caring. They've never, you know, given me any sort of trouble for that. The players have never suggested anything like that to me. And so they've been really great, but it wasn't always that way, in my professional career. And it's something that, that I'm glad to see is changing. And I think it's funny. I think you hit it on the head with the guys tend to think they own sports. We hear that argument all the time when it comes to, well, she's never played the sport, so right. She doesn't know. And it's, it makes me laugh because, you know, Howie Roseman has never played the sport, and he's the head of the team and he's a Super Bowl winning general manager. You know, there's all sorts of examples, and that sort of doesn't hold any water for me. And I think being a woman is a strength, really, especially when it comes to content, because half of our fans are women, and it's not always about, okay, just make it pink or, you know, tell them how to do an Eagles manicure or stuff like that. It's just about having representation, and doesn't always have to be talking to men all the time. That doesn't have to be the default. You can talk to both sexes just as easily as you can talk to just the one. So, so having that in mind and me being a casual fan, not because I'm a woman, but just, I happen to be a woman and a casual fan, has made our creative process better because we're hearing different perspectives.
A few months ago, I did a podcast and I talked about this exact feature, is that I've noticed there are a lot more women working in social communication roles in sports. And I had kind of a theory that, I've worked with a lot of men and women in the sports industry, and I think men tend to be more reactive and emotional, and women oftentimes tend to be more measured and thoughtful. And I think in a social role where they're so close to, you can say anything and have it tweeted out and represent the brand so quickly, that I think there's a responsibility level that women have that men don't often have. And that may contribute to the fact that more teams are saying, no, actually, I would prefer a woman in this role. Am I way off base, or do you think that I'm anywhere on top of this?
I don't think you're off base. In fact, it's one of those things. It's funny. People don't realize that it's exactly half of NFL teams are being managed, their social accounts are being managed by women, which is crazy. And we realized it at a meeting this past off season, not this off season, but last one, where it was exactly half. And that was just such an eye opener for everybody in that room, men and women, to see that while we haven't hit perfect equality in a lot of other ways, at least with gender, we're making a lot of strides. But when it comes to who's better, not better, but who's, what skills they bring to the table, I think there's something to be said. I'm not sure about the measured response, because I probably have the most, like, I'm the most impulsive out of the entire department. So I'm not sure honest. It depends. I don't know if you could blanket statement anything, but I will say that in my experience anyway, women tend to be creative in a different way. Thinking laterally in a way that a man might go for the more obvious solution. And so when it comes to social content, that's big, because like I said, we're speaking to more than just men. We're speaking to more than just avid fans. We're speaking to everybody. So being able to look at things in a slightly different way, offer a different perspective, sort of maybe turn it on its head and take a different approach has been huge. I don't think it's necessarily cut and dry like that, but in my experience and with the women that I've worked with, and the numbers increasing, I used to be the only one for a long time, and now we have a lot of women in our department and in our organization. But in my experience, that's where they really, really thrive, is that creative, like, hey, did you ever think of this? Or, hey, why don't we do that sort of thing? Whereas a man tend to be more with the rules. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's like the right way to say it, but something like that.
Oh, I can see that.
Yeah. And yeah, I think it's interesting. And in a world like, you know, every organization wants that representation and wants to grow their fan base and to make sure that they're, I don't want to say politically correct, but make sure that they are with the times.
Yes.
I think women do have a real opportunity to sort of offer that solution. And I think more and more organizations are looking specifically for that, because it's something that a lot of people are lacking.
So we have this private Facebook group for this podcast, and every time before I get on an interview, I ask that group, hey, any questions you want me to ask this person? And for you, you drew a lot of attention. You got a lot of people saying, ooh, ask her this, ask her that. But I'm going to narrow it down to a few. This one comes from Kadeem Pilgrim, who said he wanted to know, what do you do in terms of marketing and social media strategy that you think sets the Eagles apart from other teams?
I would say, I mean, I can only speak for the experience that I've had, but I'm good friends with a lot of people that work at other teams. And the one thing that I hear over and over is how much buy-in we have, top to bottom. Honestly, we've, on a business side of things, Don Smolensky is our team president, and he is so invested both financially and just in interest wise into what's going on in a social. And I'm talking just social at this point, in that industry, he's so invested in it, and it just boggles my mind every time.
Yeah.
You know, he'll be like, oh, what's going on with Snapchat? I read that's, you know, going away. What's the deal here? And it's so funny to me, because I've dealt with a lot of executives that honestly, it's an afterthought, because that's not what they're used to, you know?
Yeah.
And so, and I don't really blame them. It's just sort of where you're comfortable in. So the buy-in from the business side and then the football side is huge. So Doug Peterson is one of the most technically savvy coaches I've ever seen. He is so willing. If we say, hey, Doug, can we film? We filmed every team meeting the entire year. And that's like a really intimate, really private sort of moment with just the team. And they let us in. Now, granted, we were very careful about what was released. And we made sure that we even protected that footage from anybody in the organization. But it's just one of those things that, like, he didn't have to give us that access, but he understands the value of giving the fans a honest and in-depth look at what goes on with the team, because there's really not much to hide. It's just, you know, people are scared of what they don't know.
Yep.
So I really appreciate it. And I think that shows through in our content, the amount of access, the amount of trust that we have with the players. And that is something that's pretty unique across both the NFL and other teams. Like, you'll see a lot of other teams having to skirt around whatever rules Football Ops sets forth. But I've been so thrilled to see. It's always a discussion. Sometimes we get no, for sure, but it's always, everything's on the table. And that, I think, definitely shows through, makes us unique.
For sure. Kadeem had about 8 more questions, but I'm going to let somebody else play. Tyone
asked. Tweet me, Kadeem.
I know, right? We'll connect you guys. Tyone asked, he said, creativity is such a desired trait that people put in job descriptions all the time for jobs in marketing and social media and content. What type of things do you look for in a potential candidate? And how do ideal candidates convey creativity? How do they show that they are a creative person during the hiring process?
Sure. That's a good question, because it's hard to pin down, right?
Right,
like, you
is.
Have no idea. And we actually just went through a hiring process about 6 months ago, hiring somebody on my team for just like a content. And literally the number one priority was creativity. And it's hard to show that. So I think the number one, not number one, but the first thing, the low hanging fruit, is to come in prepared with examples, with hard copy, actual examples. So many people will come in to interviews and just want to talk you through whatever campaign they did. 9 times out of 10, there's a visual element. You may not be able to convey the entire campaign, but you could at least show an example, put it in front of me, and give that real world, you know, example of what you've done. I think that's just step one. That's like step minus one. Yeah. Like, that's the first thing you should be thinking about. And you'd be shocked to see how many people don't do that. But in terms of, then really like hammering that home, I think I really look for, less creativity, but more being willing to try new things. Because typically people that take on a lot of roles and say, oh, at my last job, there was this need for something, so I learned how to do it and I did it. That is something that shows me that you are creative and that you can think differently and approach a problem differently from many sides. Whereas a lot of other people will say, okay, well, that was my job. That's not my job, so I'm not going to do that. So having, I want a jack of all trades, right? Like, yeah. I want to be able for, if you're a web developer, I want you to have some graphic design experience, even if it's just you toying around, you taught yourself how to do Photoshop and design, whatever. If you're a social person, well, that's even a better example, because social people, like, yeah, anybody can have a Twitter account. Have you done graphic design? Have you done a little video editing? Have you done a little coding? Like, you don't have to be experts in any of those, but I think it shows that you're willing to think differently about where you fit in and willing to be useful. And then that just feeds into creativity, honestly.
Yep.
Because anybody can be creative, but are you willing to get the project done? I always tell my staff here that it's better to be done than perfect. So if it's, you can,
oh, do I
you
agree
do
with that?
All.
Yep. I agree with
it's
that.
It's so true. Because yep. People get like bogged down
yes.
and stuff. And it's like in sports and then really in life, but sports especially, that's nice that you made this perfect thing, but if nobody sees it
right.
because you missed a window,
yep.
then it doesn't matter. So, so just not being too worried about staying in your role and being open to whatever shows me that you're going to be creative and be successful in any job that we give you.
Big thanks to Samantha Wood for coming on the show. I love that she dug deep into the things that happen behind the scenes in an organization and the things that happen behind the scenes in social media. There's so much you see out front, you know, the cool graphics, the behind the scenes videos, all the different things that are shared. There's a lot that goes on behind to see what's working and analyzing the data and creating budgets and working with other teams within the organization, other groups within the organization, whether it be marketing or promotions or operations. Such a cool job that she gave us, opened up a window into and shared a little light on. So thank you again to Samantha. Please make sure that you subscribe to the podcast. I want to keep growing our viewer base. And, you know, the more reviews you can give us, the higher we rank in results and the more viewers we bring in and the easier it is for me to land guests. We've already had some incredible guests and I want to keep getting more because I am selfish and I want to do it for all of you. So thanks again for listening. Subscribe. I'll see you all soon. Time to get back to work. Thank you.